No. Okay. Okay. Parshas Korah. We are working today with an idea, which is going to be kind of encapsulated in three words. The three words we are working with today, which are going to help us understand what happened in the Korah story, is Emes Me'aretz Titzmach. Truth from the ground arises or sprouts. Truth emerges slowly, growing like a tzemach, like a plant, from the aretz, from down here. We need to keep this idea in mind because this is the bigger picture of what Korach's argument is all about. And today's shir is going to be based of two sources, mostly the thematic part of it. The theme of it is Ramesha Shapiro, one of the gems. They're all gems, but there are gems that have even more, you know, glow sometimes. And some pieces from my grandfather that help explain the specifics. Our question, and everybody's question, is twofold. There's a question on Korach, and there's a question on Moshe. The question on Korach, as you know the story, we're not going to review the story. The question on Korach is, how is it possible that Korach, who stood at Har Sinai, who saw like everybody else saw Hashem and experienced Hashem speaking to Moshe, who said Nasa v'Nishma, who accepted Moshe's role as the middleman between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, who himself carried the Aron, so he was very distinguished and very close, who was one of the greatest people of the generation in Torah. How could he make an argument which on its surface is basically saying, we don't need you? Right? If you look into the Pesukim, all right, he simply said very clearly, without getting into all the Midrashim, the Pesuk itself states his basic argument, which is, Rav Lachem, it's enough. You play too much of a role here. Ki kol ha'eda kulam kadoshim. Everybody is kadosh. Ubesocham Hashem. And in the midst of everybody is Hashem. So you don't need to play this role of the director, the enlightened one, the bestower of Torah or whatever, the teacher. We're all kadosh. Hashem is in our midst. We all know what to do. We don't need you to play this role. How is Korach able to make this argument? He stood at Har Sinai. That was question number one. And question number two is on something the Rambam says. Rambam explaining the Moshe's nevuah. Okay, he makes it, and we've done this here, by the way, in depth. But just to review, Rambam makes it very, very clear. Okay, he says that we do not believe in Moshe because of the nisim that he did. Right? This sounds a little familiar. Certainly not the nisim he did in Mitzrayim. That is not the reason we accepted Torah from Moshe. That was just enough for us to trust him to take that we should follow him out of Mitzrayim. The reason we accept Torah from Moshe is because we heard Hashem speak to him at Har Sinai. As the Pasuk itself says, and we've spoken about this, Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, you come up the mountain, and I'm going to speak to you. Ba'avor yishma ha'am bedabre imach, so the nation will hear me speak to you. V'gam b'chaya minu la'olam, and they'll trust you forever. So, again, how could Korach, so where does Korach come in? Hashem promised Moshe that if we hear Hashem speak to Moshe, there won't be any, confusion or doubt that Moshe is speaking on behalf of Hashem. So where does Korach come in? Our other question about Korach, what was he missing here? And the third question, what we're talking about now, is the Rambam says, therefore, that Moshe's nisim in Mitzrayim, first of all, had nothing to do with us accepting Torah from Moshe. That we established, we accepted that because of our experience at Har Sinai. What about the nisim Moshe did in the Midbar? Were they to prove that he's a Navi? Like bring them on and split the sea? And Rambam says straight out, the nisim Moshe did in the Midbar, as distinguished from in Mitzrayim or wherever, we're not to prove he was being him as a Navi. We're not to prove the authenticity of his Nevuah ever, but out of need. Rambam specifically says he needed to save the Jewish people from the Egyptians, so he split the sea and drowned them. Or he asked Hashem to, split. He needed to give them food, so he brought down the man. That's what Rambam says. Now, Rambam's Lashon switches a little bit when he speaks about the earth opening up and swallowing Korah. Okay? The Lashon of the Rambam is, it's not here actually, he says, he needed, okay, well, let's review. He said Moshe needed to save the Jews, so he split the sea and drowned the Egyptians. Moshe needed to feed them, so he brought them on. Korach's argument was false, and it was an attack on Moshe, so the ground opened up and swallowed them. Moshe's name is not indicated there specifically, but it is in the category of things that were done in order to solve a problem. There was a problem, and the nace was the solution. It had nothing to do with Moshe proving his nevuah to be true. Now, that's Rambam's statement, but everybody who's read the Parsha will ask a basic question. Moshe seems to say, if the earth opens up and swallows you, and you don't die the death of normal people, actually I just said that backwards, you don't die the death of normal people, then that will prove that Hashem sent me. And Rambam openly says nothing he did in the Midbar was meant to prove that he was a Navi. It was simply to solve a problem. His Nevuah was already proven. And anyway, we don't believe in Nevi'im because of the Nisim they did, but because we experienced that they are a Navi. We're talking about Moshe, rather. So look at the words the Moshe says, and let's be very careful about this strange punishment that Korach and his Ada got, okay? He says like this. Turn to page Chavches. Okay? This seems to be in direct contradiction to the Rambam. Okay, 28. Vayomer Moshe. Moshe says, Bezos teidaun ki Hashem shalachani. With this you will know that Hashem has sent me, lasos es kol hamasim eila, to do all of these things, ki lo mi libi, and it's not from my own heart. Then Moshe continues, im kamos kol ha'adam yamusun, if they die like everyone else dies, I'm sorry, im kamos kol ha'adam yamusun eila, if these die like everyone else dies, Upakudash kol ha'adam yipaket aleihem, and the destiny of every person will be their destiny. Lo Hashem shalachani. So he makes two statements. With this, you will know that Hashem sent me, okay, and not to do all of these things, and they're not just my inventions. They're not just my best, you know, my best effort here to do what Hashem wants, but that Hashem sent me. If they die like everyone else dies, and the destiny, okay, which relates to the word tafkid, pekudas kol adam, what is destined for every person will be their destiny, which is a normal death. Then lo Hashem shalachani. So first he starts out and he says bazos teidun ki Hashem shalachani. This you'll know Hashem sent me. And he ends with, and if not, you Hashem didn't send me. Then he switches and says something totally different that has nothing to do with him. He says the following. The im bria yivra Hashem, and this is Yudke Vavke. If a new creation is created by Hashem, upatsta ha'adama espiha, and the land will open her mouth, ubal'a osam, and swallow them, v'yaskola sher lahem, and everything that belongs to them, and in addition to that, three things, the earth will open its mouth is A, B, it's going to swallow them, C, vayardu chayim sheola, they will go down alive to Sheol, to the nethermost depths. V'yadatem, then you'll know, ki niyatsu ha'anashem ha'ele es Hashem, that these people have provoked, or, you know, against Yudke Vavke. So two things are happening. The strange opening of the mouth of the earth and the swallowing and going down alive, that's something against Yudke Vavke. If they die a normal death, that proves that Hashem did not send me. What is happening here? And Chazal say that Moshe was saying, if they die a normal death, that will prove Hashem did not send me, and I'll be on their side. And I'll convert over to their opinion that Hashem didn't send me. So what's happening here is all of Torah, and more than Torah we're going to see, the purpose of the creation lies in this question, and what's going to define the answer is whether they die a normal death or not. That is going to set us up for, is Korach right, and Moshe's unnecessary, and the Torah he brought us is unnecessary, right? And the way he's, all the halachas that came, that Moshe's conveyed to us are unnecessary, or not. I mean, everything depends on this, and it's going to be determined by how they die. So what is going on here, okay? In order to understand what's going on here, we have to think about Korach's question, and what's at the seat of it. So going back a little bit, it says, Vayikalu, they all gathered, okay, against Moshe Rabbeinu. And Chazal tell us here, this is in Pasuk Dalet, Pasuk Gimel, Vayikalu al Moshe val Aaron, and they all gathered and they said, we don't need you, everybody's holy. So everybody knows what's said here, right? Everybody knows that what happened here is they posed basically two famous questions. The Medrash tells us that Korach presented Moshe with two challenges. He said, number one, if a beget, we just talked about tzitzis last week, is all techeles, do you need the blue string? And Moshe said yes. And they mocked him, and they said it makes no sense at all. If the whole thing is techeles, what do you need one string of techeles? If it's all white, you need a string of techeles to remind you about the Kisei HaGavod, about Hashem, but what if the whole beget is techeles? Then he said, if the entire house is filled with sforim, do you need a mezuzah? And Moshe said, yes. And they said, but that makes no sense. The whole point, it's one paragraph. It's Shema and V'ahavta. So why do you need to be reminded if the entire house is filled with it? Okay, what's at the core of that question? So in order to understand all these things, we're going back to an idea that takes us back to before Bria, before the creation. Remember Moshe said, if they die like everybody dies, and if the normal destiny of man is their destiny, then you're right, God did not send me, and I give up. What Moshe is saying is, people all die as a consequence of living. Let's take it back a little further. When did Misa come into the world? With the Nachash. In other words, if they die, like everybody, because of the Nachash, let's take that back further. What does that mean? When we speak about the sin of the Eitz Hadas, we've talked about it a lot here. Let's use our mashal. Remember this concept. Hashem created the world with a desire for Bechira Chafshis. To that end, what did Hashem do? He concealed his presence here. Remember our mashal? How odd is it that although the mother is constantly aware of the fetus, sustains it at all times, is the shorish, the root and the cause and the life force of the fetus, that it is possible for the fetus to forget that there's even a mother. Why? To be unaware, because it's in its own little womb, and it doesn't see the mother, and it doesn't speak to the mother, and it can't come face to face with the mother. So how does the fetus keep in mind or keep focused on reality, that it doesn't live independently, exclusively, you know, relating to only what it sees and what it knows? Well, it thinks, it contemplates, it says, what's keeping me alive? And where am I getting my oxygen? And where am I getting my blood? And who's moving me from place to place? And who's keeping me warm, right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up the world like that. Remember we said Hashem put us in the rechem, in the womb, and the shorish of Rachmanus is rechem, because Hashem put us into this predicament where it's possible to be unaware of our Creator, and therefore Hashem is Rachmanus on us when that happens, right? But why did Hashem do this? Because only then could we have free choice and be creators ourselves and bring something into existence that's not automatically there. Having Moshe's degree of nevuah could be compared to having the uterine wall, so to speak, totally translucent. And the fetus sees the whole thing, the whole reality, no delusions. And they know they're not independent and a free agent, but they're an extension of, existing out of the will of, and they even have an understanding of the purpose. And in the case of the Nevi'im that saw the Masa Merkava, the chariot, right? In other words, how Hashem is conducting the world and why Hashem is conducting the world and what's the process of this? That's as if it's all translucent, but that's not our reality. So then when a person gets lost in that darkness, we call that's where death comes in. There's physical death, of course, but then we're talking about a spiritual death, which is a disconnection from the Metzius, the truth, right? There's all familiar ideas, which is a form of spiritual death. And when does one... the eyes open up and there the delusions and the fantasy world that we've created for ourselves that we believe is everything vanishes, you know, and pops and it never exists again. When does that happen? When you go through the kever, the birth canal, right, is called the kever. You go through kever, you come face to face with Hashem and say, oh, that's what was going on. How could I not have known? There's so many indications that that's what's going on. It's not clear as day. There still is that, what the Kabbalim call the klipa, the shell. That's that word they use. But we call it the hoshech, the darkness, or the hester panim, or whatever it is. And therefore, it's always a struggle. It's always a struggle. But that's how Hashem set up the world, right? That's called dying a normal death. You get confused. You search for the truth. You don't always find it. You misinterpret things. You go into default mode, which is responding just to the way you see things and your interpretation of things. And that's called being in the, you know, half in the darkness and half in the light, and the ur and the choshech are all mixed in together. And sometimes it's choshech and sometimes it's ur, and that's the process. So if they die this type of death, in other words, if they die a normal death, what that means is that their sin is part of the natural process of life, which we get confused, we make some mistakes, we don't always bring... We don't always arrive at the truth. Sometimes we get lost in the confusion. But that's all part of what the way Hashem set us up. But that's not what Moshe is saying. He's saying this is something else. The earth is going to open its mouth and swallow them. Now, the Medrash tells us, Erev Shabbos, before the world, you know, before the creation was completed, way before the sin of Eitz Hadas, Hashem already created the mouth of the earth, pi ha'aretz, this mouth that would swallow up Korach. So what is that saying? That they're not dying because of the normal confusion and mistakes. This is something, you know, that precedes that. In other words, when the earth itself will swallow someone up, what that means is that they have absolutely no right or purpose to exist at all. Hashem created the earth so that humanity should exist on it and fulfill their role. So if the earth swallows someone up until there's no memory of them, it means they have no role on this earth at all. They're not dying because they're made too many mistakes, so to speak, or they're lost in the confusion. They don't even get that far. They have no purpose to exist at all. How could somebody have no purpose to exist? So here we get to the most original, creative insight from Moshe Shapiro, how he reads this, how he understands this famous, famous Gemara. The Gemara says that Moshe, we've gone back to this a few times, went up to Shemayim to get the Torah. The angels put up a fight, and they said, why would you give your Torah to a human being? And then the Chazal tell us that there are different angles to this, that the different forces put up a fight. So Chesed said, yes, give it to human being because they do Chesed. Okay? But then, and the different, so to speak, forces argued, but then Emes stood up and said, how could you give it to the human beings? They are Sheker. Now, that makes sense because once Hashem created the world and put us in that Rechem, that womb, so to speak, and concealed his presence, obviously we're going to live in a world which is, you know, confused and not clear, and the emes is not clear, and we are going to make mistakes, and that's called sheker. We're going to live in a world of, you know, entangled sheker and emes. And emes said, if Torah is pure emes, how could you put it down here on earth, give it to Moshe to take to earth? And us, why would you take your emes, which is the essence of everything, the one truth, and give it to a human being to express when they can't possibly express it completely and correctly because they live in a world of sheker where they don't see the emes? So what if emes is your insignia, it's your symbol, it's your essence? What are you doing with it up here in Shemayim? It's in full blossom, it's clear as day, it's knowable, it's the only reality. There it's going to be, it's barely going to survive. So Hashem took emes, threw it down to the earth, and from there we get the idea that we started with emes me'aretz titzmach, that emes has to sprout from the earth. What that's saying is that and we've talked about this from different angles, if the essence is emes, to know the truth, there is truth that is so clear and self-evident and so knowable that it's the only reality. That's Shemayim, so to speak. That's Hashem's spheres. Does a truth that is an extension of Hashem himself, that expresses Hashem's oneness, because that's the only option, does that achieve? Is there any achievement there? Is there any process? Is there any effort? Is there any creation? Is there anything godlike about that emes expressing itself? God is creation. God, Hashem is choosing. Hashem is a yotzer. He's creating something from nothing. An emes that exists because it's the only reality is not really a yetzira. It's not a creation. And it does not express the covet of Hashem because there is no option anyway. It's the only truth. It's the only form of life that exists. It doesn't express Hashem's covet independently. That emes has, by the way, a word. When we daven, you know, we speak, we say, David HaMelech said to Shlomo, we say it in the brachos before Yishtabach, Hashem said, he lists all the midos or the spheros, right? Kilcha Hashem ha-gedula, v'ha-gevura, v'ha-tiferes, right? When we've spoken about them, gedula is chesed, gevura is the din, tiferes is the combination. V'ha-netzach v'ha-hod. Netzach and hod are two forces, okay? They're in the sphere, they're of the so-called, the spheros, the forces that govern the world. They're represented by the two legs. They go together. But netzach and hod means like this. And which one is which world? What do we call that world? Nitzchias. Netzach, Ramesh Shapiro explains, netzach is the quality of truth emerging in greater and greater, you know, more glaring, more overwhelming, power. Truth emerging as the only option, as the only truth expressing itself really as the only reality. That's called netzach, and that's the next world. It's self-evident. It's the only thing. Hod is something different. What words come from the word hod? Hoda'ah, which means what? Thanks. When you thank someone, what does that mean? That means there's someone else. There's another person, and you owe them a debt of gratitude. They gave you something, whether it be an object or knowledge or guidance. You owe another person something because you are better or more complete because of them. So there's another. So it's a certain hachna, it's a certain submission or bowing, so to speak. What else? How else? What other word comes from hod?
Modim.
Bowing and acquiescence. Same type of idea. Acknowledging that another person, you know, other than oneself, is playing a very important role in bowing, appreciating, acknowledging. Hod is like, well, remember we talked about Haman? And it's going to be the Korach story here. Hod is when falsity bows, when what's not emes submits, backs off, admits that it's not emes in the light of what is emes, faced with, relative to another real emes, it admits that it's not. It's not the MS that is the only thing that overwhelms us, and there's no other option. It's when there are other options, that's hod, and compared to the greater truth, we accept that this is not a greater truth, and we back off, we adjust, we try to aspire to something else. That's called hod. Hod is when you're modeh, when you bow, when you accept, when you acknowledge, when you acquiesce, when falsity in the end, what real hodah is. When falsity stands up and says, I'm sheker because I saw the emes. Now I know that I'm sheker. By the way, when a person always bows, is machnia. In other words, when a person accepts and is in a constant process of evaluating my perceptions and the truth of them compared to a greater truth and is willing to back off and accept something and be guided and be led, that seems like weakness, right? That bowing seems like weakness. But what do we always link the word hod to? Hod v'hadar. Hadras panim. The hadras panim, the beautiful ruchnius quality in a person's face, is a function of the hod. It's a function of making that constant evaluation, knowing when there's something greater that we can to look up to or to aspire to move us further along. That's where the hadras panim comes in. Hod is a type of beauty in submission. One of the mashalim is like the reed in the sea. You know, it stands straight, but when a wave comes, it bows to the pressure, all right? And then when the wave subsides, it it stands straight again. Now, when we speak about Hod, we are speaking about a world where emes grows out of false perceptions of sheker that are accepted, considered, explored, maybe even tried, and then rejected. That's what Hod is. When the Malachim said to Hashem, why are you giving the Torah to the people on earth? You know what part of their argument was? Tana hodcha al hashamayim. Let your hod, you know, remain in heaven. You are going to give the Torah to Moshe so that truth is going to come out of falsity. You have to struggle with the sheker. And then you have to back off because we recognize that compared to the emes, this is sheker. And through the process of sheker itself, truth is revealed. That's the plan. And that was the plan. Hashem doesn't need more emes in Shemayim. It's already there. It's the emes of Nitzchius. It's self-evident emes. The whole reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world and did the Tzimtzum and put us in the Rechem is because the plan that preceded all of that was that emes should arise, should sprout from a place where there's also sheker. Because that emes is freely chosen emes. That emes is not just a choice. When we choose, we are creating something new. Just responding to a button being pushed, to a habit that we're already in the habit of repeating. Just reacting to an impulse is not choosing. It's not being mechadesh, something new. It's Rosh Chodesh, so it's very appropriate. It's not being mechadesh. It's not being a yotzer, a creator. It's just being a victim of forces greater than oneself. That's all it is that are compelling one to act. It has nothing to do with godlike character traits of creation, choosing, being mechadesh, starting something new. Those are all godlike abilities. When we make a choice to reject a sheker and choose an emes, which can only come from a world where there's sheker, then we are like God. We're choosing. We're starting something new. We're not just reacting to a button being pushed. We are yotzrim, we're creators. The whole point of the Bria itself was that humanity should be like Hashem himself, creators. And for that purpose, there was a need to create the Choshech. But prior to that entire thing came Hashem's plan of having truth emerge from a place of sheker through people, because only the one, as we've spoken about, who has the possibility not to give kavod, then when they give kavod, it means something. Only when there's a possibility for somebody to live in a lie and they accept the truth because it's the only truth, does the truth mean something. So now let's go back to this. Think about this idea. What is Korach saying? This is, and who makes this argument today? Where does this argument exist today? Korach is saying something which is preceding the reality of creation and going back to the original cause. Korach is saying, if the entire beged is blue, what do you need tzitzis? In other words, everybody's holy. Kol ha'ela kulam kadoshim u'besocham Hashem. Everybody is kadosh, and Hashem is in the midst. So if that's true, if the emes is completely revealed here, then you don't need to live. As simple as that. Then there's no point for you to live, because the whole point of living is to bring out the emes. But if your argument is that it's all here, and we need no one to show it to us, you don't need that string to connect the here to the there, then that's right, then Korach, there's no point for Korach to exist at all, because the tafkid of existence is the process. If the process is complete in your mind, then there's no existence for you. You see this? Korach. Why does the earth have to eliminate Korach completely? The whole purpose of creating the earth is so that there should be a process of bringing the emes out of the sheker. But if Korach says that the emes exists in and of itself, we're all holy, we all know what's emes, there's nothing to, we don't need someone to lead us, we don't need to go through the process of becoming connected to emes. So if that's, there's no, then Hashem has MS. It's up in Shemayim. He has complete MS already. He didn't create the world for that. So then Korach's existence is completely superfluous. If the MS is fully relevant, revealed here, and there's no need to bring it out of the Choshech, out of the Sheker, then the MS, then life itself, existence itself for Korach is has of no purpose. The entire tachlis is to bring the emes out of the sheker. You see what we're saying? And if the emes already exists, then for Korach there's no point for life. And the earth itself eliminates Korach. It's not that he's dying because he's in the choshech and he's trying his best, but he made mistakes. He's not even entering the choshech. So, but then Hashem already made a decision before creating the world that he doesn't want the emes that's in Shemayim. That he has already. He wants a world where emes comes from sheker. And if Korach says, there's no need to bring the emes out of sheker, there's a full emes in and of itself, then for Korach there's no point to have any life at all. There's no point, and the earth eliminates him as if he never existed at all, because there's no place for him on the world.
But in saying that, what is he really saying for Claudius?
Okay, so let's take that further. What's Korach's argument in a more relevant way? Okay? But you see this? Do you see why he doesn't die a normal death? Mm-hmm. This is what my Shapiro explains. It's a nuance, but it's such an interesting, simple kind of, you know, equation. It's not a punishment to Korach. The purpose is to bring the emes out of the sheker. He says everybody's kadosh, and everybody has Hashem. And we don't need someone to be mashpia, to teach us. We don't need an other. There's no hod. There's nothing to bow to learn from, to accept someone else's direction. We don't need you, Moshe. Then you're going back to the emes that preceded existence, the emes that's in Shemayim, the nitzchias, the self-evident emes. But that's not what Hashem wants. Hashem created a world because he doesn't want that kind of emes. So if Korach wants to be back there, so the earth eliminates him, he doesn't exist at all. He doesn't die a normal death. The plan of creation doesn't include him. He's just excluded himself from the plan of creation. Because he imagines that he's there, he's in a place where there's no need for a create, where he's in a place that Hashem already said is not the place that's going to be where emes is going to come from. The place emes is going to come from is from the earth. And if Korach is not in that process, then he's excluded himself from needing to live. So he's eliminated instantly. Now, let's go into this a little bit more in detail. Okay, and then we'll try to understand Korach's argument more relevantly, right? You follow this point? It's a nuance, but it's...
And so as a result...
Okay, so we're going to make it more relevant. But let's just look into the Pesukim, okay? Moshe is saying to Korach the following. If Korach's argument is true, if it is possible for Emes to emerge in and of itself without it being drawn out of Sheker, in other words, if you don't need someone to teach you, to guide you, to play a role, that's Rosh and Aaron, to show you how to bring the Emes out of Sheker. If that's the truth, then Moshe is unnecessary. And he says, I'll accept that. I'll accept that. If I'm unnecessary, then I'm unnecessary. If it's possible for Emes to emerge the way you're saying it, then I'll even, you know, and that's proven by your natural death, I'll back off too. But Moshe is saying it's not possible for Emes to emerge that way. Emes must come through the struggle against Sheker. So let's go into the Pesukim carefully here. Okay? And that's why Moshe is not defending himself here. By the way, contrary to the Egel and the Meraglim and the Slav, where he begged on behalf of Klai Yisrael, here it says, and he doesn't beg on their behalf, he falls on his face. Because this isn't so much against Moshe per se, because Korach saw him get Nevuah. It's against the entire concept that Klal Yisrael, that people need others, that at a certain point, Korach is saying, you get to a point where you don't need anymore to be influenced, to have somebody pull you along. You can self-generate all the emes you need because God is within you. He is eliminating the need for another. And Moshe is explaining to him through the saying, Hashem chose Aaron, Hashem chose Moshe. There's never going to be that reality that there's no need for another person to help you progress, because the only way you progress if you accept that something outside of yourself might have another angle, another understanding of the truth, and you can learn from it. Remember, an object at rest remains at rest, right? Unless acted upon by an outside force. We all learned this in physics, one of the first rules.
Inertia.
There's always an outside force that has to drag a person along or push a person along. If we believe that we're on such a madriga like Korah, that the emissary within us is enough, and it's self-generating, and it will spread and spread and spread, and we no longer need any force acting on us, then at that point, we've excluded ourselves from the need to exist. Because existence means a never-ending process of struggling with the sheker and comparing it to MS, and in that comparison, bowing to the truth and bringing out, literally bringing out, being yotzer, creating, being mechadesh, a new degree of MS in the world. It never ends. Once you think it's over, it's the MS is expanding on its own, self-sustaining, self-generating, like in the Olam of Nitzchias, fine, but then you have excluded your need to live. So, wait, Chavi, I know, just wait. So, look here. So he said to them, okay, Bezos teidon ki Hashem shalachani la'asos es kol hamasam eila ki lo milibi. Pasuk Chavches. This you're going to know, that Hashem sent me to do all these different things and it's not from my heart. The emphasis here is not on Hashem sent me, that they all knew. The emphasis here is that Hashem sent me to do all these things and it's not me, you know, wanting to be a leader for the sake of myself, but Hashem wants me to guide you in all these ways, because the nature of life is there must be another person. There must be another. An other. There must be an other. And without the other, a person just, you know, kind of enters into a world of delusion, a whirlpool of their own imagination, in which they are the source and the totality of the truth, and the truth exists with them, exclusively in them. And there's no need to struggle against the force of sheker, because they are MS. My MS is within me. I accept my own interpretation of MS as MS, and that's never that is not the nature of life. So Moshe is saying, Hashem sent me to do all these things. There's always got to be another in the world, another. And in Hashem set up others. He set up Kohanim and Leviim. He set up others, they put them in place, and they are the mashpiyim, they give hashpa'ah, and we are mekabel hashpa'ah, we accept hashpa'ah, and there's no other way out of that arrangement. Okay? Now, then he said, im kamos kol adam yamuson ela, upakudas kol adam yipaket aleim lo Hashem shalachani. If they die, the normal death, in other words, because of the sin, in other words, because of confusion, and they struggled with the sheker, but they didn't quite get it, and their confusion led them to attack Moshe, but that's all still part of the normal process of struggling with the sheker. If they die like that, then it means that they are struggling with the sheker, they're doing their best, and you know what? That will call into question, that will legitimate, in a sense, their argument. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu eliminates them from existence completely, that will show a whole different lesson. That concept, that idea, that whole ideology precludes the need to even exist at all. So look what he's now. He says a few things. Let's go into this specifically. Im Bria Yivra Hashem is all Yud Kei Vav Kei, because Yud Kei Vav Kei is the one who brought the world into existence, right? Yud Kei Vav Kei is the reason that there was the world was brought into existence. Yud Kei Vav Kei is the Chesed. This is the whole Chesed that leads, gives us Bechira, right? That wants us, the lachatchila mode is to struggle with the sheker. That's how MS is going to emerge. MS me aretz titzmach. That's the plan. So Hashem is going to create a bria, brand new. Now this bria, the Medrash tells us, was really created Erev Shabbos, before everything. Because what it means is that the whole existence, our existence, is predicated on our struggling with sheker. If not for that role, there's no point to our existence. So the non-existence of someone who won't play that role was already embedded into the nature of things. Right? Make sense a little bit? The non-existence of someone who is not playing that role is already a given. It's already embedded in the nature of the world. It already is part of the purpose of the world. Then he says, Upatzta ha'adama espiha. Now, the earth will open its mouth. This is called pi ha'aretz, the mouth of the earth, and swallow them. Let's talk about the imagery of the mouth. In a human being, what does the mouth do? Two things. It takes in, swallows, and it speaks. Okay? To take in is sustain our physical life. To speak, as Unkelis says, everybody knows this, by yipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, he blew a neshama, that's a ruchnius life. By he adam lenefesh chaya, and the human being became a living force. Unkelis says, ruach memalala, a speaking spirit. So with the food we take in sustains our physical life. Our words, not just words, but our words of truth that are a physical expression of our ideas of emes, right? They express the existence of the neshama in the person. They convey the message of the neshama. So the mouth does both. It sustains us physically and it sustains us spiritually. It's what expresses and shows that we are alive spiritually, okay? Well, the earth has a mouth. The mouth swallows that which has no point to exist, just eliminates it. But it also speaks. In fact, if you look in the Pasuk, okay, if you look in the Pasuk, hold on 1 second. What Pasuk is it? When they were swallowed up? One minute. Okay, look at Pasuk Lama Dalad. When the earth opened them up, V'chol Yisrael, Asher Sevivo Sehem, and all the Jews that were surrounding them, okay, Nasu Lekolam, they fled from their call, from the call. So Chazal say here, whose call? The sounds coming from the earth. In other words, Rav Moshe Shapiro says here, the earth consumes those who have no point to exist, who are not part of the tachlis of existence, but it also speaks. The earth conveys a message. What is the message that life on earth is teaching us all the time and the point of creation? The three words we started with. Emes me eretz titzmach. That truth will sprout from down here. And truth is the point of everything. That's the sound, the voice, the message of the earth. By the way, the famous story of Rabbi Bar Bachana, the one that all these stories are about, that the Vilna Gaon speaks about, he was traveling in the desert, and somebody said, come, I'm going to show you where Korach was swallowed up. The famous story in the Gemara. So he took him to the desert, where there was a fissure and smoke coming out of the fissure, and he took some cotton and put it at the end of his spear, and he put it over the fissure, and it singed, it burned. So there's a fire in there. And then Rabbi Bar Bachana put his ear down, and what did he hear? Moshe emes v'toraso emes. Now, what is this saying? What is this saying? In other words, now this Rav Moshe says, again, is similar to what we talked about by Haman. If the point of the Bria is that emes should sprout from the ground, from here, from Sheker, Korach himself has no use to exist because he claimed that emes is self-generating. You don't need anything outside yourself to know the MS. That's really the relevant message that the trap we could fall into today. There's one trap, which is the trap of the sin of the Eitz Hadas, the regular form of death, which is, I'm trying, but I'm lost in the Choshech. I know there's a truth, but I don't know where it is. I'm making the mistakes. I'm saying this is true, that's true. I'm looking, I'm seeking. But there's another default mode we get into, which is, I know the truth. I don't need anyone to tell me. I don't need any guidance. I don't need anybody to enlighten me. I'll come to the truth on my own. It's self-evident. Things will emerge from within myself. The truths will be knowable to me through myself. That's a little Korachi. If there's no struggle, there's no point to live. If you're not entangled in the MS Sheker battle, there's no point. You're not producing MS out of Sheker. When Korach himself is the one who, although his argument precluded his need to exist at all, his death establishes the MS even more than any other force, because his death means that if you don't think that emes has to come from sheker, you don't need to exist at all. His death is the ultimate proof that Hashem threw emes down here and wants emes to only sprout from us, from very flawed people mired down in sheker, you know, who are trying their best, or really trying their best. That's where it wants to exist. And if you don't understand that, then you have no right to exist. So the fact that he's there still screaming, Moshe emes v'toraso emes, is the ultimate proof that this argument is false, and that life is about bringing emes out of sheker, and his is the ultimate sheker of all the shekers, because his sheker is that in his world there is no sheker. Right? So this is the message of the earth that it's constantly conveying, and that Korach is the messenger of, and he even says that this is his tikkun, that everyone has a tikkun, everybody has a tikkun, and the process of the tikkun in itself is welcomed and brings a person closer and back to knowledge of the emes. And then it says, so the earth will open its mouth and swallow them. That will be, in other words, give a message, which is emes me'eretz titzmach, and swallow those who don't have any purpose to exist because they don't accept that message, they don't believe that message. And then you'll know that these people, it wasn't against Moshe at all, they were contending with Hashem. The whole purpose of the Bria they've already challenged. And the challenge comes from an idea, and this is how it's relevant to us, that when we exclude ourselves from the struggle of constantly judging ourselves, am I emes or not? And the only way to do that is to make that determination relative to something else. You can't do it relative to yourself. Relative to yourself, we're all perfect. We're all right. We're all we could be the source of truth. I mean, the whole idea here is there's no such thing as functioning in a framework that does not necessitate others and the roles that they play in our lives to teach us and to guide us and to pop our delusions of fantasy. But the idea here is that the reason Hashem even went through the process that we always talk about of the tzimtzum and the choshech is because prior to that, Hashem's essence of his will was that emes me'eretz titzmach. And to not be part of that is to exclude one's own self from needing to exist. Yeah.
Is in and of itself then something that's elevated.
Exactly.
And so that the Yerida
exactly.
that leads to the Aliyah
exactly.
How could it be considered something that's bad? And then the other thing that I wanted to say is, and then it makes sense why Yehuda is the king. He's from Hod. He has this, in the process with Tamar, he really dispels something false. And, he does it in a way that, really could have implicated him.
And he also does it even more so, you might even say, with the Binyamin Yosef story when he says, yes, it's about Yerida Letzorech Aliyah. Absolutely. That means a descent in order to ascend. And there's one idea from a footnote that we haven't spoken about this in a long time, but it's amazing. He teaches it by the Akedas Yitzchak. But basically, to make a long story short, there is a Gemara, okay, that says that if a person sits down, yashav, v'lo avar aveira, and he doesn't sin, nosam lo schar kesha'asa, he gets a reward like he did it. So when the Gemara clarifies and says, no, it doesn't mean just sitting, I'm not killing, I'm not stealing. But no, mit avera baliyado, an avera presents itself, he could succumb, benitzel himenon, he holds back, then he gets schar. Question is, wait, what schar? Schar for making a bracha, schar for keeping Shabbos, schar for hashavas aveda. I mean, a person is about to sin and doesn't, he gets a schar. For what? For which mitzvah? If there's a violation, don't eat, or don't be mechal Shabbos. A person holds back and he's not mechal Shabbos. So what does he get the mitzvah for? There's no mitzvah that he's fulfilling. So Rav Huttner answers, no specific mitzvah. So Rav Huttner answers, yes, there is a specific mitzvah in Devarim. Okay? The mitzvah is the following. Es Elokim Tira'u. Am I saying it right? Es Hashem Elokecha Tira'u. Es Hashem Elokecha Tiro. You shall fear Hashem, your God. Rav Hunter explains. How do you fear Hashem? By wanting to do an avera, or, by the way, conversely, not wanting to do a mitzvah, really not wanting to do that mitzvah that's in front of you, or really wanting to do that avera, and you struggle with yourself, and you determine, you make a decision based on your knowledge and the people you don't want to disappoint, and all the others outside of you, not just people, but truths that are speaking at you, that are, you know, kind of... They form an imperative upon a person. Taking those things into consideration, a person holds back. And they don't sin. They just fulfill the mitzvahs ase doraisa of es Hashem lekecha tira. Now, normally, a mitzvahs ase doraisa has an action. The action of this mitzvahs ase doraisa, it's in the Torah, is the struggle in here. That's a mitzvahs ase doraisa. That we get schar on. So when a person wants to succumb to the sheker and is machnia, bows, midah of hod, down here on earth, where it's not easy, and brings out the emes, they've just fulfilled the mitzvah ase doraisa that they get schar on. This is the idea. If a person is not engaged in that struggle, they've excluded themselves for the need to exist. By the way, they say that his original plan is that he should take the power, and that was the cause of this whole false argument. That this argument sounds so idealistic, but it's tainted by his own need for kavod.
But let's play it out. So what was his plan? Okay, he'll take the power. What's his plan for Klal Yisrael if there's no emissary?
It's a form of anarchy which leads to total disaster. In other words, there are, by the way, it's very interesting, very interesting. I saw this idea that the people have the truth, okay, which is a noble concept, and give the people a voice, and the truth will emerge, is a very noble theory. It always leads to anarchy and chaos, because what gets in the way of the truth emerging is the person's self-interest. So it's not a tenable situation. It just sounds very beautiful. But the way Hashem set up the world is, no, there's no such thing as, you know, truth emerging on its own, except in Shemayim. And Hashem doesn't want that. And Hashem would have left everything in Shemayim if that's what he wanted.
How was he going to leave? Then what? Like, what would he do different than Moshe?
It's like communism, Lahavdil, I think. That, in other words, the people, the power to the people, the nobility of the people, right? But in the end, the few leaders hoard the power. Anyway. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful week. Oh, stop. Everybody stop. Do me a favor. I'm asking you a little favor, not a lot, of $10, $15. There is a wonderful organization in this town called Tal Tachia. They're having a little parlor meeting thing on Tuesday. I'm very friendly with the one who runs it. They do a lovely job. They work with a lot of these kids who are really struggling. They give them a program. They give them chavrusas. They give them Shabbatonim. It's a local thing. They don't have a very big budget at all, but I promise I'll just do my best. So if anybody wants to make a little donation for Tal Tachia, be very... Tal Tachia. Tal Tachia. Tal Tachia. Thank you. If you want, it's okay. Yeah.
Wasn't this amazing? Exactly what are you struggling with to